Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Pfaff. I'm the head of sustainable finance at ICMA. I'm very pleased to welcome you to this ICMA podcast on the topic of the role of the sustainable bond markets in promoting biodiversity. We'll also be talking more widely about ESG disclosures, especially in relation to biodiversity. I'm very pleased to be joined by Elise Calais, who is the head of Division Enterprise at the French Ministry for the Ecological Transition, and also by Margaret Coulot, who is the head of Global Finance Practice at WWF. I'm going to turn now to Margaret to start. Margaret, why is biodiversity so important, and what are the priorities? And how do you think the sustainable bond market, and particularly the green bond market, can most effectively contribute to address biodiversity priorities?
First, Nick, thanks a lot for bringing us together for the conversation. This is really very important. I think COVID-19 in particular has helped us think more about the things we normally take for granted, like nature, and it has given us an opportunity to re-examine the relationship. On the one hand, the pandemic has brought into fine focus the risks of the sort of behavior that create the ideal environment for zoonotic diseases to spill over to pandemic events, essentially deforestation and habitat destruction. On the other hand, we've come to appreciate much more the significant mental and spiritual health benefits that come from being in nature. And for those of us lucky enough to be able to breathe in some fresh air or gaze across a vast grassland, walk along a stream near our homes, it really has served as a respite as we cope with the dual impacts of the health crisis and the economic crisis. So biodiversity is important. Nature is in is in everything we do, all the services it provides, from the food we eat to the water we drink and the air that we breathe. And all of these services are under strain. Every other year, WWF produces a Living Planet report. And in that report, we present a Living Planet Index. And in 2020, that index shows that the average population size of vertebrate species, mammals, birds, fish, reptiles, has declined at a staggering rate, 68% on average since 1970. It's kind of shocking. That's two-thirds reduction in these populations, but basically just in our lifetime. And we're not the only ones, WWF environmental organizations, that are talking about this. The World Economic Forum's latest global risk report shows that biodiversity loss is among the top risks. And in fact, the majority of the risks that they have in that high probability and high impact quadrant are now environment related. The OECD is also talking about this. They've estimated maybe as much as $20 trillion per year lost in ecosystem services from 1997 to 2011. And the Dutch Central Bank has recently issued a report detailing the costs to the Dutch economy from biodiversity loss. I never would have believed, had you asked me 5 years ago, that a central bank would be writing about biodiversity loss. I mean, really, we are learning so much from climate, the relationship between climate and nature, and we've got the opportunity with financial instruments like green bonds to mobilize capital markets now to promote bond investment in the projects and the assets that are necessary for a rapid transition, not just to a low carbon economy, but to a climate resilient economy and a biodiverse rich economy, because really that serves all of us.
Margaret, thank you very much for that. And those biodiversity reduction statistics are truly terrifying. Let me turn to Elise. Elise, the French state is a very large issuer in the green bond market, and perhaps now the largest issuer actually in that market. But what is perhaps less known is how much biodiversity has been an important part of the expenditures of the French state that are being financed by its green bonds. So, I mean, I noted that in 2019, it was the second largest level expenditure with approximately 1 billion euros equivalent. But it's not only been in that year, it's a recurring priority. And I was wondering if you could tell us more about how the French state and the French sovereign have approached biodiversity in this context.
Thank you, Nicolas. I have to say, as Margaret, that I'm very happy to be with you today too. And I think the topic of biodiversity finance is really, really growing in importance now. Coming back to the Green OAT, I think the first idea of the French government when issuing the first green sovereign bond was precisely to try to match the challenges Margaret was just referring to. It was at the moment in the context of the COP and of the Paris Agreement to come. So at the moment, it was a way to show how exemplary France could be as a state in terms of environmental policies. And effectively, we decided not only to address mitigation and adaptation to climate change, but also other objectives such as biodiversity and pollution. So you were asking how we tried to address biodiversity when issuing the French Green Bond. The thing is, as a sovereign, France has to choose for the green eligible expenditure among the state's expenditure. And you have to basically find eligible expenditure that are green to match all taps that happen each year. So the Green OAT was launched in January 2017. And at the moment, the amount was 9.7 billion euros. And now, several taps later, its current outstanding amounts to 27.4 billion euros. And to choose the eligible expenditure, there is a committee of people coming from different ministries, and it's under the aegis of the Prime Minister. And they screen each public expenditure, and these expenditure have to correspond to a framework with the four objectives I mentioned. So mitigation and adaptation to climate change, biodiversity and pollution. But also there is a set of exclusions, and we try to avoid double countings with other issuers. And there is a reasonable level of assurance of the green credentials by Vigeo Eiris. So for biodiversity, for example, the green eligible expenditure includes the National Forestry Commission and the public grant that is given to it in charge of maintaining sustainably the forests. Also the tax credit for organic farming and the part of the public grants attributed to the French Waterways Office. And indeed, it's 857 million euros among the 5.9 billion euros allocated in 2019.
Thank you, Elise. That's extremely interesting. And I, as an observer of the Evaluation Council of the French Sovereign Green Bond, I can only attest to the rigor and the detail that this process embodies. Turning back to Margaret, what do you think is the scope for public sector green bond issuers to make a real difference by financing biodiversity projects?
I think the connection with nature is more immediate for the public sector. And green bonds are highly relevant tools, not just at the sovereign level, but also at the sub-sovereign level for a number of reasons. I think first, governments have direct responsibility to preserve and protect their natural capital and the services that it provides to its citizens. Second, because these bonds often have long maturities, I think in the case of the French OAT, it's 17 years, the money that's borrowed essentially is money that the next generation of taxpayers have to pay back. So there's an inherent stewardship match between both the financial and the natural resources. Third, there's a public good element to nature protection and restoration that's sort of the opposite side of the coin of environmental externality. So a public bond issuance can capture the economic benefits or similarly incentivize the pricing of environmental externalities in a way that you really can't do with a corporate bond, because the revenues that are accrued are societal or economic benefits as opposed necessarily to private financial returns. And there's also a transparency component to the green bonds that really is a game changer, not just for biodiversity, but for the whole sector overall. So the being able to issue an instrument against use of proceeds track how those monies are used, and then it also provide information on the environmental impact of how those monies are used really has fundamentally changed how people think about the debt markets in general. And if you think about it, it's remarkable. In the third quarter of 2020, almost 14% of bonds issued in the European debt capital markets were issued as use of proceeds instruments. And even at the global level, these use of proceeds instruments represent almost 5% of all issuances. So it's a significant improvement in transparency. And it's a market then that serves the increasing investor demand and ultimate consumer client demand to make their money matter and understand what happens with their money, their investments.
Thank you, Margaret. And I remember very well a few years ago when talking about green bonds and the sustainable bond market, you know, we were being told it's only 1%. So now we're at 5%, and it's great. You know, in Europe, it's much more than that, as you said. So that really is indeed progress on that front. Elise, as you probably know, the Green Principles that ICMA supports has recently released guidance for impact reporting of biodiversity projects. And, you know, in that context, you know, it was clear that finding appropriate metrics can be especially challenging. Has that also been your experience from the French perspective?
As a matter of fact, in terms of biodiversity, finding common metrics is far more complicated than, for example, it is the case for climate bonds. Because for climate bonds, you can use greenhouse gas emissions or CO2 emissions. And it's really a widespread metric. So it means you can compare emissions between companies, between issuers, etc. It's quite easy. When it comes to biodiversity, it's far more complicated because some assessments can be only qualitative. And also because even if it's quantitative, there can be a number or a diversity of metrics. For example, you can count the diversity of species in a place. You can count the seal artificial surfaces, but this type of metrics are not really comparable, and sometimes they fit to one project and they don't fit to another. So it's not always easy to use it across diverse issuers. You can also count on a composite index, but sometimes it's more difficult for stakeholders to grasp what they mean, either financial or the general public. It's more complicated. So what we try to do with the Green OAT is also to provide to the market an experience in that respect, because the Green OAT was launched quite early in the market. It was in January 2017. And also because the bond is so big, we have to report, of course, even closer on what we do with the funds. So France decided to set Green OAT Evaluation Council that is in charge of assessing the impacts of each expenditure, and it's an ex post reporting. So the council is an independent body, and it's composed of high-level international experts, either in green finance or in public policies in the field of environment. And I have to say here that you are a member, Nicolas, of this body, so we are very happy to have you with us. And this council is in charge of defining a work program for the evaluations, to define the terms of reference, to task evaluation teams, and then to provide an independent opinion on the scientific studies that are provided and then published. So in this way, we try to publish unprecedented methodologies and to provide our small parts, small contribution to defining how to better assess impacts in terms of biodiversity finance. Maybe I will give an example. For the French Waterways Office study that was published last year, we decided that a counterfactual scenario would be what a private office would do, which means without a public interest mandatory task, what they would do in terms of maintaining the French waterways. And we considered they would just implement the existing legislation. And whereas the French Waterways Office, because it's public, it's implementing also other measures on top of it. For example, some fish ladders, some care for trees suffering diseases, etc. So we tried to find a way to assess all this and to wrap it up in a study. And I can mention also that another study on the French Forest Office will be made public very soon.
Thank you very much, Elise. And You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's very, very interesting to be on the Evaluation Council and to see the great work that is happening there. I'd like to shift slightly the focus. We've been talking a lot about green bond expenditure, green bond projects for biodiversity, but there's also the topic of disclosure at the issue level on biodiversity. And Margaret, turning to you, I wanted to ask, how important is, you know, more generic, the disclosure of biodiversity by issuers and by corporations?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I completely agree with it. At least this is much more complicated than climate-related disclosure. And biodiversity disclosures are important both on the use of proceeds and also at the issuer level, as you mentioned. Just like with climate change, investors need to understand and recognize the nature-related dependencies, the risks, and the impacts. And for that, they need robust, reliable information at the issuer level. And the disclosures need to be, as Elise mentioned, standardized and comparable. Otherwise, it's impossible to make sense of the data and the information that the companies produce. So at the G7 in France last year, with the support of the French government and together with the French insurer AXA, we made the case for the creation of a task force on nature-related financial disclosures. It's modeled on the task force for climate-related financial disclosures, and together with partners UNDP, the UN Environment Program Finance Initiative, and Global Canopy, we recently launched an informal working group with about 70 financial sector and corporate partners. There's a tremendous amount of interest in this area. And such nature-related disclosures will help financial institutions shift finance away from destructive activities and toward nature-based solutions. And disclosures can also create broader resilience in the global economy by redirecting flows of finance at scale towards nature-positive activities. As we learn more about the interaction, especially between climate and nature, and the need really to treat these two issues together. In France and at the EU level, this type of sustainability-linked disclosure is already becoming mandatory. And we believe that the TNFD, this Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosure, can help make the effort more global. The EU taxonomy of environmentally sustainable activities, which already includes the so-called do no significant harm criteria for both biodiversity ecosystems, it will be expanded this year to help identify activities that have positive effects on biodiversity and ecosystems. So that's also an important step in the same direction. And the new reporting requirements against the EU taxonomy will shed light on how European companies are earning, spending, and investing their money, and whether and to what extent they're applying the do no significant harm criteria in investment decisions. So this together will provide investors with much better, more comparable, and more reliable data on the greenness of European companies, and also help them make more informed investment decisions. So this TNFD effort and the sustainable finance platform that the European Union has launched with a number of other countries together will all help in the globalization of some of these reporting standards.
Thank you, Margaret. We're certainly seeing a lot of activity at the European level from the Commission on terms of new requirements, and in some cases, mandatory requirements for ESG disclosures. And you know, if you look back a few years ago, we had some, you know, very seminal initiatives. And I, you know, of course, coming back to the French context again, we had Article 173, which I think sort of was one of those real important landmark reference points, and you know, for what's been happening in Europe. And turning back to Elise, is there more on the horizon in terms of initiatives for disclosure that you see, Elise?
Thank you, Nicolas. I have to say that the French government believes really strongly in disclosure as a key incentive, because it gives a role to citizens and consumers in this case, and they can choose who they entrust their money with, depending on their ESG practice. So coming back to 2015, France put in place Article 173, and it was in the law on energy transition. And from this time, investors had to report on how they take climate risks into account in their strategy. And we saw that it improved the level of green bonds or green finance in general in their sets. And as a matter of fact, it's not only a question of clients, but also financial stakeholders are changing behaviors and trying to reach better performance when they begin to assess their own standards. So it's really interesting. When you measure where you stand in terms of performance, it gives you an incentive to try and do better. The disclosure regulation that was adopted by the Parliament and the Council in 2019 at the EU level will come into force at the beginning of 2021. And what is interesting is that it's not only taking into account climate risks, but it's all types of ESG risks, all types of environmental, social, and government risks that financial stakeholders will have to report about. And we can see there is room for biodiversity here. As a matter of fact, we had to adjust a bit our law following the entry into force of this regulation, because naturally a European regulation replaces a national law. But in this case, we had a bit of leeway for further developments. So we decided to keep our climate-specific regulation. And we decided also to put some specific biodiversity reporting obligation in place. So the Parliament voted it in the 2019 Law on Energy and Climate. And we are currently drafting the decree. So it should come into force at the beginning of 2021 or so. So this will be a major change, because French investors will also have to report regarding their biodiversity practices and how they take this risk into account starting next year.
Very interesting. Margaret, we've been talking with Elise a lot from the public sector perspective, but I didn't want to finish this podcast without also talking about what the private sector can do. And from your perspective, I mean, you know, is there a different approach from the private sector? Is it complementary? Are we doing enough?
Those are all great questions. I think that the short answer is we've started our way down the road. I'd say, and I think the leadership from the European Commission on Sustainable Finance has been great. And there are a number of markets that have picked up that example and are developing similar sorts of taxonomies. Because I think what you're seeing is increasing demand for these kinds of products in all sorts of markets at all levels, from the institutional investors' desire for green bonds to individual investors looking for more sustainable places to put their money. So having a more clear taxonomy or dictionary of types will really help direct more of those funds and also help the those investors make sure that what they're purchasing is in fact what they think they're purchasing. The EU taxonomy is already available for climate-related environmental objectives, and they'll expand next to cover biodiversity and ecosystems. And this is a kind of dictionary that will give you the ABCs of investing in sustainable tools. We need investment in nature and its resources where nature matters most. So we'll have this dictionary that helps us, you know, A for sustainable agriculture and B for biogas, C for conservation funds, M for my favorite ecosystem, mangroves. The nature-based solutions are becoming more and more important because they can harness the power of nature to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They also help us adapt to the impact of climate change. And they're win-win solutions that protect, restore, and sustainably manage ecosystems to promote human well-being. So having these dictionaries, these taxonomies to make the products that provide capital investment in that direction will help drive more funds in that direction. There's a real opportunity. If we go back to where I started on COVID, there's a real opportunity in the bond market and the offshoots of the green bond market, the sustainability-linked bonds, transition bonds, and even green loans, where we've seen a lot of pickup in the private sector for finance that's focused on this kind of restoration, regeneration, resilience that we'll need to recover essentially from the pandemic and be more ready for the next crisis.
Margaret, thank you very much for that. With this, we're going to bring our podcast on biodiversity and the role of sustainable bond markets to a close. I'd like to thank Elise very warmly for her contribution.
Thank
again. Thank you, Margaret. And with that, we will end. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.